Hello. Sister Didi?
You're on the air,
yes,
people. Sister. You're on the air.
Oh, hey, I'm sorry. I didn't know that.
Okay. Oh,
I'm, this theater. Okay. This theater, I'm sorry.
Okay. I just didn't know if anybody else was on here. Hello, everyone.
You're on the air, folks.
History is a clock that people use to tell their political and cultural time of day. It is also a compass that people use to find themselves on the map of human.
Ashe.
Ashe.
We'll pour to the creative spirit, the great Ashe out of which we all emerge. Ashe.
Ashe. Ashe.
We pour to that creative spirit by whatever name we know it, whatever name you hold in your heart, in your mind, whatever name your ancestors gave, whatever name you learned as a child, whatever name you believe it to be, whatever name you believe it to be in spirit or in science. Ashe.
Okay.
We pour to the first human beings who came into existence on this planet, the first human beings who raised the first structures, who cooked the first meals, who taught the first children, who had the first children, the first Africans, the first people who stood upright, who walked, who figured out how to stay on this planet, who figured out how to pass that knowledge on to their children and their children's children, the mothers and fathers of civilization. Ashe.
Ashe.
We pour the next libation to their grandchildren, their children's children, those who raised the great early civilizations of Kemet and Kush and Monomotapa, the great medieval civilizations of Ghana and Mali and Songhai and Kanem-Bornu. We pour to those who great the great civilizations of the Igbo people and the Hausa people and the Kikongo people and the Mbara people, the great Munda civilizations, the great Kikongo, the great civilizations of Southern Africa, the Bantu people, the great civilizations of Southeast Africa, the Dinka, the Shilluk, the Nuer. We pour to those millions who raised the foundations from which the world would learn what it meant to be human in the world. Ashe.
Ashe.
We pour to their children who, upon the arrival on the shores of people they had never seen before, found themselves captured and marched overland, found themselves perishing by the millions before they were held on the holding cells and the open air pens on the coast of West, Central, Southern, and East Africa. We pour to the ancestors who did not know, as they were stripped of all clothing and sent denuded into boats, packed like animals and strewn their bones across the floor of the Atlantic and the Indian Ocean. We pour to them who in the last moment on Africa grabbed the sand and grabbed the dirt and put it in their mouths and understood that the only thing they might have to preserve their place in that continent was their memory of that place and their ability to pass it on to their children. We pour to them. Ashe.
Ashe.
We pour to those Africans and their children who, finding themselves cast adrift in Santiago, Cuba, who found themselves cast adrift in Port-au-Spain, Trinidad, and Port-au-Prince, Haiti, who found themselves cast adrift in New Orleans and Charleston and Mobile, who found themselves cast adrift in Salvador, Bahia, who found themselves cast adrift in Barbados and the archipelago that formed the Wayward and the Windward Coast. We found them in these places learning Portuguese and Spanish and French, whose often first words was, "Oh my God," or "Madre de Dios," who found themselves praying to survive and pass on to their children the memories. We pour to those ancestors who are represented in the thousands buried in all the square miles of where we stand and who sit here buried before us in 400 caskets forged of wood from West Africa with Adinkra symbols. Each one of them, each woman, man, and child, symbolic of millions. The children of those who could not be killed, we pour our shame. We pour to their children who somehow survived the hells of enslavement and fought for emancipation in the Caribbean, the French, British, Dutch Caribbean, who fought for emancipation in South America, who fought for emancipation in Central America, who fought the struggles we refer to as the Civil War in the United States, who came out of that, marched out of enslavement through Reconstruction, and found themselves making great migrations, eventually ending up in places like New York. Their children's children, who making a way for themselves, became our great-great-grandparents, our grandparents, our great-grandparents, our parents. Those who, when the first bones were discovered in this space, held their hands and said, "Stop! No more!" We are here to speak for those who can no longer speak with their mouths. We pour for those ancestors, some of whom came to Howard University in 2004 and followed these caskets all the way back to New York. We pray to the great ancestors, the ones whose names we know and the ones whose names we don't. And at this moment, as we pour this libation, I would ask anyone who feels comfortable to say the name of someone in your bloodline who is no longer physically here, but who you know made it possible for you to be here. Go ahead, let's hear the names. Haywood Carr.
Porter Griffin.
Thomas Jr.
Evelyn Glover.
We pour to the names that we hold collectively. Ganga Zumba in Brazil. Toussaint Louverture, Jean-Jacques Dessalines, and Henri Christophe in Haiti. We pour to the great Avengers, Nanny of the Maroons of Jamaica. We pour to the great ancestors, Harriet Tubman, Sojourner Truth, Frederick Douglass. Say the names that you study. Who are the names of the ancestors that you have come to hold in your heart and your mind as you hope that you can do what they did for us, for your children and children's children? Let's say some of those famous names.
Malcolm X,
John Henry Clark, John Jackson, Jacob Carruthers. And finally, two final libations. We pour to those who make it possible for us to do what we do. We pour to these rangers who stand guardian over this sacred space. We pour to these Africans and these folks who have come from Howard University, the staff, the faculty, the administrators who brought us here today to bear witness. This is not a libation, but an affirmation, because their hearts still beat, their tongues still speak, their minds still think, and their minds still wish the best for us. We pour for all of those people who surrounded us on this journey today and made it possible for us to be here. We pour this affirmation of thanks, Ashe.
Ashe.
And finally, we pour to your children's children's children who will one day stand on this space and speak your name.
Ashe. Ashe.
History is a clock that people use to tell their political and cultural time of day. It is also a compass that people use to find themselves on the map of human geography. History tells of people where they have been and what they have been, where they are and what they are. Most important, history tells a people where they still must go and what they still must be. The relationship of history to the people is the same as the relationship of a mother to her child.
What shall I tell my children who are black of what it means to be a captive in this dark skin? What shall I tell my dear ones, fruit of my womb, of how beautiful they are when everywhere they turn they are faced with abhorrence of everything that is black? Villains are black with black hearts. A black cow gives no milk. A black hen lays no eggs. Bad news comes bordered in black. Black is evil, they say. And evil is black, and devil's food is black. All that is bad is black.
Mm-hmm.
What shall I tell my dear ones who've been raised in a white world? A place where white has been made to represent all that is good and pure and fine and decent, where clouds are white and dolls and heaven. Heaven surely is a white, white place filled with angels robed in white and cotton candy and ice cream and milk and ruffled Sunday dresses and dream houses and long, sleek Cadillacs. And angels' food is white. All that is good is white. What can I say, therefore, when my black child comes home to me in tears because a playmate identical to himself has called him black, big-lipped, flat-nosed, and nappy-headed? What will he think when I dry his tears and whisper, yes, that is true, but you are no less beautiful and dear? How shall I lift up his head and get him to square his shoulders, to look his adversaries in the eye, confident in the knowledge of his worth, serene under his sable skin and proud of his own beauty? What can I do to give him the strength that he may come through life's adversities as a whole human being, unwarped and human, in a world that is full of biased laws and inhuman practices? That he might survive, and survive he must. For who knows? Perhaps this black child of mine here bears the genius to discover the cure for cancer, or the brilliance to chart the course for the exploration of the universe.
Mm-hmm.
So he must survive. For the good of all humanity, he must and will survive. I have drunk deeply of late from the fountain of my black culture. I have sat at the knee of and learned from Mother Africa. I have discovered the truth of my heritage, the truth so often obscured and omitted, and I find I have much to say to all of my black children. I will lift up their heads in proud blackness and tell them the story of their fathers and their fathers' fathers. And I shall take them into a way back time of kings and queens who ruled the Nile, who raised the pyramids, who measure the stars, who discover the laws of music and mathematics. I will tell them of a black people, our black people, upon whose backs have been built the wealth of three continents, Europe, Africa, and America. And I will tell them this and more. Knowledge of his heritage shall be his weapon and his armor. It will make him strong enough to win any battle he may face. And since this story is so often obscured and omitted, I must sacrifice to find it for my children, even as I sacrifice to feed, clothe, and shelter them. This I will do for them if I love them. Nobody else will do it for me. I must find the truth of heritage for myself and pass it on to them. And in years to come, I believe, because I have armed them with the truth, my children and their children's children will venerate me.
Yet our best trained, best educated, best equipped, best prepared troops refuse to fight. Matter of fact, it's safe to say that they would rather switch then fight.
Fight the
are listening to Black Reality Think Tank with host Dr. William Rogers on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
Sister Minta, are you there? Sister Minta?
Are we there?
Yes, waiting for you.
Oh, I must have had it on mute. I said, just want to welcome everybody to the Elders of Sankofa radio broadcast tonight. Our theme is Justice is in Our Hands. At this time, we're going to have Dr. James to come forth and talk about the purpose of the Sankofa Council.
Good evening, everybody. So happy to be here today. And from our bylaws, from the Sankofa Council of Elders, the purpose of this organization is to use African principles of unity and cooperation to create a healing environment for our community.
Thank you for that, Dr. James. We also have, and I'd like Dr. James to explain, our sponsor is edocadvice.com. Now, you guys, this is really a wonderful group created to get answers on healthcare and medical concerns. But I'm going to let her explain what that program is about.
Thank you so much. As you know, I'm a physician, and I have been so for 40 years. And it came to me as I talked to many that there are questions that come up about one's health plan and health decisions. And this is a website that one can go to and ask their specific question. And I are among the physicians who are part of a panel who will receive that question and will respond to you very specifically. If you have a lab report that you'd like some answers to, we'll do it. So it's called EDOC Advice, and you go to www.edocadvice.com.
Okay, Dr. James, thank you. Sister Dee Dee, I know you're ready and full of fire for us with the ancestral profile.
I don't know about the, thank you so much for that. I don't know about the full of fire, but thank you. And yes, I am. I'm going to give a little brief on Paul Robeson. So is it okay that I go ahead? My sister?
Please.
All righty. So I'm going to give a little brief on Paul Robeson. Wonderful, wonderful black man. Paul Robeson was a famous African-American athlete, singer, actor, activist. And he was born April 9th, 1819 in Princeton, New Jersey. Paul Robeson was the youngest of five children. His father was a runaway slave who went on to graduate from Lincoln University. His mother, I believe, was a teacher in Philadelphia, if I'm not mistaken. The Robeson family knew both hardship and the determination to rise above it. his own life was no less challenging. Paul Robeson played baseball, basketball, football. He was very, very athletic. He had that beautiful, I believe, baritone voice, and his voice just, his voice was wonderful. He played in a lot of, he did a lot of plays. There's just so much more about him. I didn't, I must say there's a lot, there's just a lot of other stuff. It's just so much about him, and I'm not going to just go on and on, but Paul Robeson, he passed January 23rd of 1976, and he was 77 years old. He passed away in Philadelphia. I know they were trying to say at one time that he was a communist or something like that, but he refused to sign some papers they wanted him to sign. They took his passport away from him, but by him going to law school, he went to court. He won his passport back. He got it back. And I guess they were trying to ask him. Oh, hello? Okay. I'm going to just let it go with that, okay? Because it's just so, it's a lot in here. And I'm going to just let it go like that. He was just a great, great man, a great activist, had many great friends. He was even really good friends with Lorraine Hansberry, just so many other people. So I'm going to just let it go with that, sister.
Well, thank you so much, Sister Dee Dee. He's always been one of my favorite, too, because he's one of the people who is a great example of living true about his Africanness.
Yes.
And also living that unity piece that we discussed last week.
His, yes.
He took
yes.
his job so seriously that
yes.
He had to go to France because he couldn't live here in America for advocating for his people. So he's
yes.
always been a favorite of mine for that reason.
Yes. I mean, it was just so much. I mean, just so much about him and how they kept trying to turn the people, you know, trying to make, they tried to really make black people think that he wasn't for black people. And I know I also was reading where he was performing a lot in New York, but a lot of his a lot of his performance got canceled. And I know I read where it said he went from making $100,000 all the way down to just $6,000. That's just how they kept trying to, you know, just mess up his career. These
Again, we want
really
to thank you, Sister Dee Dee, for,
yes,
for that information
well.
And for your research. And audience, we've been talking for the last week or so about rebuilding our community. So I'm going to use the analogy of putting a building together. We need bricks, right? And
mm-hmm.
so the bricks that we're using to fortify this building are true, the laws of my aunt, the principles of Nguzo Saba, which, folks, is not just the Kwanzaa thing. We have to be able to internalize those principles and those laws to edify ourselves so that as we build this building, as we rebuild this village, then we have some real stuff to work with each brick. And the mortar that holds those bricks together is spiritual development. If we miss that, of course, you know where the bricks go, right? You're not going to see an edifice from that. And so today, as we continue with a couple more bricks of justice and Kujichagulia, which is self-determination, we have a really interesting guest who's going to be on. Last week, we did truth about inner development, unity in within ourselves, connecting to that truth in our families, dealing with each other with kindness, in the community, being able to interact with each other from a compassionate stance rather than a judgmental piece. And once again, that mortar of spiritual development is there. And as we move into our theme, justice is in our hands, our guest is going to do a lot to open our eyes to that. But meanwhile, audience, we want to look at this while we're listening. Who am I? So then how do you live our heritage? How do you practice that every day? Am I really who I am? So are you authentically showing up in your cultural package? And am I all I ought to be? So, you know, that's about walking the talk. So those things we want to consider as we look at justice is in our hands with the Maai principle of justice and with the Nguzo Saba principle of Kujichagulia, which is self-development. So without further ado, we want to introduce this wonderful lady who, man, every time I look at her and the stuff that she does, I'm like, if I only had a fourth of her energy, this woman, she runs upstairs. I can hardly walk up. Anyway, Erdowat Musewi Keset, a.k.a. Yakini Shabaka, Queen Mother of the Milwaukee region of Alcerisset Society International, which is a Pan-African spiritual society founded by His Majesty Ra'unefer Amin I, and was founded in 1973. The society is organized as a confederacy consisting of a King of Kings located in Brooklyn, New York, and regional paramount kings and queens located throughout the diaspora. Erdowat Musewi Keset was installed in 1991 as a paramount queen mother and is responsible for the spiritual and social development of the members of the Milwaukee region of the Alcerisset Society International. To that end, the Milwaukee Hess has, under the leadership of Shechemer Shechem, Ra'unefer Amin, offered comedic spiritual classes, ceremonies and spiritual counseling. And they've been doing this for about 29 years. The five pillars of the society are transformation agents, spiritual cultivation, spiritual reading, meditation, healthy lifestyle, and social accountability. Queen Mother is a retired educator who has taught at all levels from elementary to college and is currently an entrepreneur. She has always supplemented the standard school curriculum with African history and culture and was a recipient of the Milwaukee Times Black Excellence Award in 1990. She was founder and director of the African-centered Kamet Institute Charter School, which focused on Kemetic culture from 1996 to 2004 in the Milwaukee area. Queen Mother has traveled extensively in West Africa and spent 3 years teaching in Liberia. She's been received as Queen Mother from the Asante Hini and the Agogo Hini in Ghana, West Africa. She is a passionate advocate for African spiritual culture and for nation building for Africans on the continent and Africans in the diaspora. She currently works on the steering committee of the Sankofa Council of Elders in Milwaukee. And I'd like to say Netarat Erdowat Musewi Keset.
Harakatapu, how are you?
I'm doing well, and yourself?
Good. And good evening, everyone. It's an honor to be here. I would like permission to open up with a very short poem that kind of expresses my position. It's a poem by one of my teachers, Haki Madhubuti, and it goes like this. There is much to be learned. There is much to be unlearned. To do both takes an open mind and a mind that questions. We can get the right answers only if we ask the right questions. And that is an expression of what I bring to this program. The older you get, the more you realize that you don't know. And so I want to dedicate this program to all of my teachers from whom I've learned and to whom I owe what I know today. I want to start. Should I start talking about justice, or you have a question?
Please do.
Well, we all know that there's a strong urge for justice. We see injustice all over the place, and we see the sort of the plea for justice. That plea can take the form of protests. It can take the form of court cases and so on. But I want to credit my current teacher, Shechemur Shechemron Neparamin, for sharing with us the information from our ancestors in Kamet, who realized and intuited that the desire for protection from injustice is an integral part of our spirit. It's an urge that must be satisfied. How we satisfy it is determined by the part of our brain complex that it's functioning from. So the fact that man has four brains and not just one may come as a surprise to people, but having this knowledge is essential to understanding ourselves and fixing ourselves, says Rauh Neparamin in his book, The Wa'eb. It says that hidden inside our head is an evolutionary story that goes back 155 million years. So I want to read just a little bit from the book Wa'eb about those four brains. Two of these brains belong to the animal kingdom. They are the reptilian and the mammalian brains in man. One of the remaining two was first introduced into the evolutionary scheme with the first hominids. It is the cerebral neocortex, which has greatly increased in size in present man, Homo sapiens. The last of those brains belongs to the true man, who is destined to transcend the human stage and become the divine man. You know, we hear a lot of talk about saying that we are divine, but what does it mean when we're divine? Well, when we are coming from the reptilian brain, that urge for justice leads to the concept of an eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth behavior. It leads to revenge and punishment and preemptive behavior. And as I go through these, I'd like for the audience to think about who, what individuals, what groups, and what even nations function in the way that I'm describing from this book. The desire for protection from injustice from the mammalian brain results in rules and regulations to protect one's kind. A different set of rules for others, though. Who do we know that does that? And then the desire for protection from injustice from the neocortex results in elaborate ideas to justify the punishment of wrongdoers instead of correcting and redeeming them. Creative ideas to disguise the animal brain's inclination to seek revenge. So this law of justice is a law of cause and effect. One will recap what one sows, even if it takes several lifetimes. So this justice thing is an urge that we all have, and we need to be mindful of where they're coming from, what part of the brain they're coming from when they seek justice in the way that they do.
Irvine, could you spell the title of that book, please, and then explain more than one lifetime?
More than one lifetime? Oh. Uh-huh. Okay, the book is spelled UA. Capital A-B, Y-E-B. And the subtitle is Heal and Enhance Your Brain. So, I'm learning to process how people seek justice as an expression of what part of the brain is functioning. And one of the things that we need to be mindful of is that only one of those brains can function at a time. If one of those brains is in the forefront, the other parts are subservient to that part. So if someone is functioning from the reptilian brain and they're only looking out for themselves, they only want justice for themselves. If someone's functioning from the mammalian brain, they want justice for their kind, even at the expense of others. So we know that most of the people in this society, we have an abundance of elaborate ideas and we have all kinds of talk shows, and we have all kinds of theories, which is functioning out of the neocortex. But the frontal lobe is the brain that enables us to plan and reason and anticipate outcomes, which is what is necessary if we want to achieve justice in the political world, in the economic world, in all of the areas of life that we feel we are experiencing injustice. So you know, when we come to the questions part, I'd like to know how people see justice being achieved by using the frontal lobe of the brain, which is the brain that is able to intuit, to be moral, and to be holistic. So how does that tie in with Heru Kahut, with Kuji Chagaliya? Kuji Chagaliya, to define ourselves, name ourselves, and speak for ourselves, instead of being defined and spoken for by others. So how do we define ourselves? Do we define ourselves as minorities, disenfranchised, powerless, disunified, victims, or do we define ourselves as defined, original, African, powerful, unified, an expression of our Creator? Defining ourselves, it gives us a self-image. And so when we seek justice, the first question we should ask is, who is it? Who am I? Who is it that's seeking justice? And how do we seek justice? In Kamet, the prevailing self-image is one of being one with the Creator, being an expression of our Creator. One of our Kemetic teachers said, there is only one being in the world, and that's Neter. And everything else are the infinite components of that one being. In the book, African Ancestral Voices, I want to read to you what Camille Yarbrough said. She says, Sankofa, we have to pull from the back what made us strong and use it right now. We have to change. We have to grow. We have to acknowledge different philosophical approaches to life and redo ourselves. What did the ancient teaching say? Know yourself. Don't run from being African. Don't run from the African story. It's the greatest story that could be told. Know yourself and recreate yourself. So, in terms of defining ourselves, we have to know ourselves. We have to know what our strengths are, what our where our power lies, which is in the spirit. Should I keep going?
Well, I wanted to ask you to explain, you said there's only one being, Neter. Can you elaborate on that?
Well, in African spirituality, wherever it exists in the world, the basic concept of creation is that there is a creator that created itself out of itself and created the universe out of itself. There was nothing before the creator created the universe. There was nothing. It was Amen, no thing. And so everything that is created is a part of that first emanation of the Creator. So when we look at each other, we're seeing an expression of God. Even when we look at our enemies, they're seeing an expression of God. It may not be the divine expression. It could be from the lower part of the spirit, which we all have. So it's a matter of what part of the spirit are we nurturing?
Well, that's an interesting concept, and I know much of the audience, this might be really new to most of us who are listening in terms of value system and concentrating on the brain and that kind of thing.
Yes, yes. So understanding the brain is so essential to understanding why people behave the way they do. And especially in relation to justice, because we assume that if a person knows the right thing to do, that they can do it. And that's not necessarily so. We have to look at what kind of lifestyles enhance the higher brains so that we have access to the higher brains to make decisions based on reasoning and planning and not just a spontaneous outburst of emotionalism.
Okay, so when you say lifestyles, you mean the way people live in their houses, or are we talking about diet and just what's included in lifestyle, according to what you're saying?
Okay. Lifestyle starts with diet. Our physical bodies house that brain, as well as those spiritual faculties that make things happen in our lives. So you know, we have a spirit. People say all the time, we're a spiritual being having an physical experience. Is that the way they say it?
Yeah, I think so.
Having a human experience, I think that's the way they say it. Having a human experience. And that's true. We are having a human experience, but we haven't gotten, you know, they say God ain't through with us yet. God ain't through with us yet. We're still evolving. If you go to the museum and you go to the Kemet exhibit or the Egyptian exhibit, all the exhibits that they have anywhere in the world, you go to an Egyptian exhibit in a museum, you will see all the artwork is spiritual. All of the sayings are to remind people of who they are, that they are divine beings. And that is why Kemet was so great. That's why they were able to accomplish all that they did for as long as they did, because the focus from the leadership was on becoming divine. So diet plays an important role because, you know, we get our energy from our diets. And if we have a diet that's not full of energy, you know, then it consumes our energy to try to digest it. You know, if our diet, if we're eating foods that are alive and full of energy, then that energizes all of our cells, and including our brain cells. If we eat a diet of non-foods or junk foods, then that uses the body's energy to try to assimilate those, to try to make them into food, and they're not food. So the functioning of our brain is very much dependent on our diet.
Now, when we talk about mental diet, is that where we take in music and films and words and books? Is that the things that we take in mentally?
Exactly. Yes. And in today's society, we are bombarded with verbal expressions. Let's put it that way. We're bombarded with verbal expressions. These, what we call sound bites. And
what does that do to the body, the verbal expression?
Well, depending on what the expressions are, they manifest in tension, stress, you know, or if the sound bites are those of truth that are uplifting, then that uplifts the energy and is inspiring and empowering. So there's a real war going on now with the mental food, as you say, because we're told what to think. And we don't realize we're being told what to think.
Oh, okay.
It's put, you know, it's
subliminal messages. Is that what you're saying?
Well, it's, some of it's subliminal, and some of it's not so subliminal.
Oh, okay.
Some of it's just right out there, you know, but we don't question it because we've been conditioned to imitate. If we would just sit down and think about how much of our life is imitating what we see in the world. We imitate in styles, in words, so much of what we do is just indiscriminate imitation.
Mm-hmm.
When I drive down the street and one person pulls over in the right-hand lane and then goes out on the red light, then you go a few more blocks, another one does it. Well, I don't believe that inspiration came to all those people. They were imitating what they saw, and we imitate things that are to our detriment. So we have to be mindful.
As we line up for the top of the hour, this is very, very interesting, Erwat, in terms of this mental diet and how that relates to justice being in our hands. I'm looking forward to the audience and their questions and some of their feedback regarding what we've heard so far and how that changes or enhances their vision of what justice is. And what defining ourselves is. So at the top of the after the top of the hour, we're going to accept phone calls and questions and comments. Please, y'all, call, because this is really an interesting subject. 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. And we're talking with the Queen Mother of the Sarasota Society in Milwaukee, who has some very interesting things to say about justice and self-determination being in our hands. So as we roll to the top of the hour,
what you're calling African history and Negro history are the missing pages of world history. Go study the history of your masters. Go study the history of the people who enslaved you and find out why they found it a necessity to remove an entire people from the respectful commentary.
Sometimes alone in the evening, I look outside my window at the shadows in the night. I hear the sounds of distant crying, the darkness multiplying, and weary hearts denied. All I hear is my heartbeat beating like a drum, beating with confusion. All I hear are the voices telling me to go, that I could never run, causing my African dream.
If you understood this, maybe we could free ourselves. We are totally an unobligated people. We don't owe anybody anything anywhere, left or right. Everybody that has come among us have come among us to exploit us, and they have exploited us successfully. Now, let us begin at the beginning, because African people stood alone at the beginning of the world and started humanity, and started a thing as basic as tool making, as basic as making a bucket, a basket, as basic as learning how to use fire, how to bring down animals. Started all of this in the area to the south. When we look at and visualize a map of Africa, you have to visualize the Nile River and realize that that river is like the womb of a woman. And out of this womb came a series of children. Let us not call it civilization. White people have so misused the word civilization until the word has lost its meaning. Let us call it a culture. Came a series of cultures that developed and moved down that river, a great cultural highway, to establish a way of life and to create a way of life, religions, and history that is going to be so rich that mankind will steal from them from then on. And the rape of the culture of that river would change the world for all time to come.
You are listening to Black Reality Think Tank with host Dr. William Rogers on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
Hotep and greetings, my brothers and sisters. We will be getting back with that dynamic conversation with Sister Bakari and the Queen Mother in just a few minutes. We want to just really welcome again and thank all of you for listening. We are here every Saturday evening. This is the Elders of Sankofa Council radio program. And we really appreciate your participation and your patronage of this program. We are broadcasting on the timeforanawakening.com network, which is a part of the Black Talk Radio Network. The Sankofa Elders radio program is also a part of the Black Reality Think Tank radio network as well. And so, again, we thank you. I just want to kind of quickly indicate some of the programs that are broadcasting on the Time for an Awakening system. We have on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, we have a program called African Perspectives that airs from 11 a.m. Eastern Time to 1 o'clock p.m. Eastern Time, called African Perspectives. And that program is hosted by Brother Oshi Amy Adelabu. On Monday evenings from 6 to 8, there's another program called Acres of Diamonds. Acres of Diamonds, and the host of that is Brother Jihad Ahmed. That's every Monday evening from 6 to 8 Eastern Time. And then from 8 to 9, we have Black Therapy Central. Black Therapy Central is hosted by Queen Mother Dr. Cambone and Sister Nataki Cambone every Monday evening from 8 to 9 p.m. Eastern Time. And then on the first and third Mondays of every month, we have Conversations with Reparations by the Encobra organization that airs from 9 p.m. to 10 p.m., 9 p.m. to 10 p.m. every first and third Monday, Conversations on Reparations. And then on Tuesday, you have the Black Reality Think Tank with yours truly. That airtime for that is 8 Eastern to 10 p.m. Eastern, 7 to 9 Central. That's every Tuesday. And then on Thursday, we have a program with a group of millennial young women called After 7, and the host is Sister Shani B. And that program airs from 7 p.m. Eastern Time to 9 p.m. Eastern Time every Thursday. And then on Friday, the Time for an Awakening Network creator and developer, Brother Elliot, and his co-host, Brother Richard, broadcast a program from 8 to 10 Eastern Time every Friday evening, 8 to 10 Eastern Time. And then on Saturdays, from 4 to 6, Black Sister Talk with host LaWanda Chambers. Black Sister Talk with LaWanda Chambers from 4 to 6 p.m. Eastern Time. And then following that is the program that you're listening to now from 7 to 9 p.m. Eastern, the Elders of Sankofa program that's being hosted today by my dear sister, Mitha, and hopefully our regular host, Brother Alfonso Watkins, who is out ill, will be back very shortly to help assist in this program. And then on Sundays, finally, time for an awakening again with Brother Elliot, Brother Richard, 7 to 9 p.m. Eastern Time. Time for an awakening on Sunday evening. And that is our lineup for the programs that we have here. All of our programs are archived. You can go back into the website at www.timeforanawakening.com, www.timeforanawakening.com. Go into the search portal and look for any of our programs, Black Reality Think Tank, African Perspectives, Time for an Awakening, any of those, and listen to any program that has broadcast previously 24/7. And we do highly welcome you there. This is a very powerful and dynamic conversation. We are looking at justice from the perspective of Ma'at. And the Queen Mother has given us a very dynamic and powerful facts that we should consider in doing that. As Sister Mentor says, this is looking at Ma'at in Guzo Saba and all of those things that must guide us and lead us as we are doing. So with that, I'm going to turn you back over to Sister Mentor, who is going to continue this dynamic conversation. As she said, the call-in number here is 215-490-9832. You can call us with questions or comments. Again, area code 215-490-9832. We would love to hear from you. So with that, Sister Mentor.
Thank you, Dr. Rogers. Really appreciate that. Another announcement we need to make. We're going to continue with the BRICS of Ma'at laws and Nguzo Saba principles. But next week, because of a sister who lives in the motherland, wants to take part in the discussion. We're going to change it from 3 to 5 just for that week, just for October 24th. But keep an eye out to see where we are with that. And with that, once again, we can't go without our sponsor, edocadvice.com. So Dr. Janine explained to us earlier how that works, and hopefully you'll take advantage of that. Dr. Janine, did you have anything else to add to the edocadvice.com?
Well, I wanted to remind everybody that we're looking for sponsors, other sponsors for our program. So sponsors are welcome. And do you have a service you want others to know about? Have you written a book we need to read? Consider becoming a sponsor. Email the Black Reality Tank at Sankofa, and these are in lowercase letters, Sankofa, S-A-N-K-O-V-A, or F-A, I'm sorry, S-A-N-K-O-F-A, think@outlook.com. Send us a message if you would like to be among our sponsors. And contributions to support our broadcasting efforts can be made to us.
Hold on, I got to.
At outlook.com. So, again, more sponsors, edocadvice.com is a website that allows you to take your medical questions, medical reports, things that you're wondering about and you'd like to know what your options are and to know that you are given some scholarly and experienced information. Come to us at EDOC Advice, give us your question, and we will get back to you with an answer.
much for that, Dr. Jane. So we are returning to this stimulating conversation, and we're going to ask that you call in and add your stimulation in here, too. Sankofa elders, Sankofa means to go back and fetch it. Not to just go return and get it. That's mild. But when you fetch something, you take it with a forceful hand. And that's what we got to do in rebuilding our community. Brick by brick with Maat Law and Nguzo Saba principles. We can do it, y'all. I know we can. And I know y'all know we can, too. We just got to embrace those laws and practice those principles 365 days a year as opposed to just connecting it to Kwanzaa. So with that, we're going to get back to Queen Mother of the All Sarasota Society here with her interesting concept of taking justice in our own hands through diet, physical diet, as well as mental diet, the things that we take in. Queen Mother?
Yes. Okay. Since we had our break, I'd like to share another poem. These poems are from The Book of Life by Haki Madhubuti. And this one goes like this. We are not a tribe. We are a nation. We are not wandering groups. We are a people. We are not without land. There's Africa. If we let others define us, our existence, our definition will be dependent on the eyes, ears, and minds of others. Other people's definitions of us cannot be accurate for us because their hurt is not our hurt. Their laughter is not our laughter. Their view of the world is not our view of the world. Others' definition of the world is necessary for their survival and control of the world. And for us to adopt their view of the world is a necessary step toward their continued control over us. Therefore, to let others define us is to assure we will be a tribe. We will be wandering groups. We will be landless. Self-definition is the first step toward self-control.
Thank you, Erdogan. That was really good. Erdogan, could you spell Haki Madhubuti's name?
Haki is H-A-K-I. Madhubuti is M-A-D-H-U-B-U-T-I.
Thank you so much. And the name of that book, again, is Book of Life.
Book of Life, Third World Press.
Sounds like it has a lot of wisdom in those pages.
I love this book. This is, you know, it takes me back to my waking up, my awakening days.
So, folks, we're gathering information to get these bricks together and to use the mortar of spiritual development to keep these bricks in place so that we can transform the community in which we live. It is not an impossible thing. It has not gotten so out of hand that we can't do anything. We just got to start with the basic building, making sure that these bricks in the form of the laws of my aunt and the practice of the Nguzo Saba 365 days a year, so that we will take justice into our own hands. Once again, who am I? Do you know and live our heritage? Am I really who I am? So do you live, do we live the cultural authenticity? And am I all I ought to be? So how you walk and you talk. Mm-hmm. So they tell me that the young people are saying that my generation dropped the ball. What do you think about that, Queen Mother?
I think there is much to be learned and there is much to be unlearned. Young people should have a questioning mind and ask the right questions so they can get the right answers.
Okay. So as we move on, I'm just, my mind is just wrapping around all this brain information that you have given and trying to get it digested here.
You have some callers.
Yeah.
Okay, caller.
Okay. Area code 334-414, Brother Lush. Brother Lush. 334-414, Brother Lush. Okay, he's having some, I think he's having telephone problems. Okay, we have a call from Jackson, Mississippi. I don't know if you're just listening or would you like to say something? Jackson, Mississippi. Okay, he's listening. Sister Yan, 336-621. Questions, comments?
Yes, greetings, peace and love to everyone, the elders. How's everybody doing?
Greetings, sister. Wonderful. And you?
I'm good. Listening and loving what I'm hearing. And thank you, Queen Mother, for sharing what you shared, especially the last piece about young people asking the right questions, learning how to ask questions instead of just making the assumptions that they've been making. That's so critical. So, I want to make a quick comment. I'm a Libra, and so I've always believed just, you know, intuitively in justice and balance, you know, and the laws of my art, just the little that I do know. It's always been an internal thing in me. But I do realize that as long as we're with, you know, with an enemy that's oppressing us for centuries, we will never have justice. That just is not going to happen. You can't get justice from an unjust system. And, you know, it bothers me when I hear young people saying no justice, no peace, because it's just like spitting in the wind. It's not going to happen. It's just not going to happen. And the only way that we will have justice, I believe, is through separation from the people who are, you know, destroying the whole earth, not just Africans, but the whole earth. So I think separation is critical in order for us to have any kind of justice. Now, the Nguzu Saba, I grew up in a Black nationalist community, and I know that the Nguzu Saba works. We implemented those seven principles, and what was built out of that was just fantastic. And I really, really want to see us replicate that and do that. I want to see us go into action on a deeper level and get off the streets with the protesting and whatnot and just build as I'm hearing, you know, on this show. So it makes no sense. Our young people, I just, you know, I'm preparing for some conversations with them because they're thinking that some things work that just don't. If you build your own, you can make it work. And we have, I don't know how many blueprints for that. And so it's mind-blowing when I hear people say, especially young people and older people, well, what are we going to do? What's the solution? We did it. We can do it again. I just think it's very important for us to look at where we failed. And I will say this because I'm beginning to examine our spirituality. So I'm a student also of IFA. And IFA works. And IFA has some of the Orisha, most of the Orisha are either warriors or healers. Mm-hmm. And we have to produce more of both. Because this society, as was referenced earlier, is not producing warriors. It's producing what the sister was saying, people just, you know, being socially engineered and just doing what everybody else does.
Mm-hmm.
And so we have to take that, and I hate to say we have to or we need to, because, you know, that's always being said. But when we decide to start producing warriors, and first, of course, decolonize, you know, our minds, or else we can't do nothing but talk, then we can, you know, we can start building and you know, getting out of this insanity. It's pure insanity what we're in right now. And I, at this point, I'm just like, we need to be away from this insanity. It's making us more insane just being in this environment. Mm-hmm. So I don't want to keep going on, but, you know, this is real stuff, and we have to have real solutions that we can do now.
Mm-hmm. Things that we can embrace and actually put into practicality. Is that what you're saying? What is your name, sister?
Practicality now. Yes. My name is Sister Boniswa.
Boniswa?
Boniswa. My Yoruba name is Ifayeni.
Okay. Ifayeni?
Yes.
Okay, you have.
I'm so glad you called, and that's some really powerful information that you have when you talk about the Nguzo Saba bricks work, the spirituality mortar that keeps them together works. That's fantastic. Thank you so much for calling in.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Sister Young. Montgomery, Alabama.
Good evening, everyone, and good evening, Sister Mensa and Queen Mother. Thanks for taking my call. I'm usually asking questions along the lines of how to do and what to do. Each and every one of us has the breath of life. With that then comes this sense or an idea of what justice is. Can you speak for a moment on the power of prayer or the power of meditation that can be incorporated in such a way as to help us form this just or justice in within our society?
Queen Mother, I just love the way you answer that kind of stuff. Thank you, Brother Lush, for that question.
You're welcome.
Thank you for that question, because it gives me the opportunity to talk about the power of meditation.
Mm-hmm.
As we said, one of the pillars of transformation is meditation. And with meditation, you know, it's becoming popular in the world today, but meditation has to be used as a tool for transformation.
Okay.
And we have to transform from using the brains that lead to stress and tension and anger and fear and, you know, those kinds of emotions that are impotent. All of those emotions are impotent. In the news today, we hear so much talk about being angry. The journalists mm-hmm. are angry, the people are angry, and that's impotent. you're not going, you know, power, as I think Frederick Douglass says, power concedes nothing but to power.
Uh-huh.
So we have to find our power within, and we do that through meditation. We have to develop institutions that promote meditation and promote transformation and building. We can't do it individually. Institutions are built collectively. Nations are built collectively. So we have to come together, and coming together requires that people are willing to follow guidance. And if the guidance is lawful, moral, and truthful, then our individual opinions need to take the back seat.
Uh-huh.
So, yes, meditation is a very powerful tool for transformation.
Thank you. Thank you, Queen Mother.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Brother Lush.
Thank you, Brother Lush.
Ladue, Missouri, 314. Would you like to ask the question, or are you just listening? Ladue, Missouri, area code 314. Okay, just listening. 414-839.
Hey, everybody, can you guys hear me?
Oh, yes. Yes, indeed.
Yes. Yes.
Okay. Yeah, I just wanted, I heard Queen Mother, you know, I'm just going to shut up and allow her to speak more, but I really appreciate the conversation. And who was the sister that had just called from, was that Alabama?
Sister Benicia.
Ifayini.
Yes, I mean, as far as us moving and being in a separate, being a nationalist and so forth, I mean, we've proved that we could do that when we had the Black Wall Street. You know, I mean, we didn't know of the Depression or anything like that until they came around and destroyed us, basically. They saw how well we were thriving and doing things, so we can do that, and I think that that's just the direction that we need to go. We need to not try to be integrated with people that just don't care for us. You know? And that's just a struggle because for whatever reason, it seems like we try to bring, you know, us all together, you know, and that just hasn't been working for so long. I don't know when it has. But we have done so many great things. Yes?
Are you familiar with an area down by Georgia that, I think it's Georgia, that's called Ifatunji?
South Carolina.
No.
Is it South Carolina? It's South Carolina.
Beaufort.
Oh, that's Tunji.
Oh, huh? What'd you say, Queen Mom?
Oh, Tunji.
Olatunji, yeah.
Oh, yeah, Tunji mm-hmm. Village.
Yes.
Mm. No, it doesn't ring a bell.
Brother Harris, that's a group of people that have their separate life from the United States.
Mm.
So maybe if somebody's listening that knows more than I know about it, maybe they can tell you about it.
Yeah, that would be interesting to find that out. I would like to see how they're set up. You know, I mean, because
and then Dr. Rogers has been there. He's visited there.
Yes, one of our elders here in Milwaukee, who's now an ancestor. Brother Matahochi, I was a guest with him to go down and visit the Olatunji Village. It's in Beaufort, South Carolina, and
Okay.
Yeah, and it's a very powerful and unique community of Africans. And it, there's a lot more. They have a website. They have a Facebook presence. I'll get the information for you and share it with you, Brother Harris.
Oh, okay. I appreciate that. You know what the numbers are in that location where they live?
No, I don't know their numbers. I know that they have a charter. They are chartered by the state of South Carolina. They are a township. They're considered a township.
Okay. Dr. Rogers, are those the Gullah Geechee people that you're referring to?
Not the Gullah, no.
Oh, okay.
The founder is a, I think he was from New York, I believe, and
Detroit,
okay.
Mm-hmm.
And his family, a lot of his daughters have their own community village in Florida, and then there's a village there in South Carolina. And again, like I said, they have a website presence and a Facebook presence.
And do you know how they acquired the land?
No.
And, you know, the conditions and
Queen
so
Mother,
forth?
Queen Mother, you
It'll
know that.
Probably be on that Facebook.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Speaking
of Kujichagulia, there are two young women in their early 20s that just bought some land right outside of Georgia, a city. If anybody listening knows what I'm talking about, because I just ran across it in the paper just briefly. They decided this city was going down and becoming
right.
like a ghost town, and they bought it. And largely took their young men from the larger cities so that they could breed without being afraid that they're going to be shot down and killed.
Yeah, I've seen them on Facebook. I got it in my archive somewhere. I'll have to go check on that, but I recall that.
Mm-hmm. So there are examples of... But if you can't leave, you still are obligated to show up authentically in your African essence. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's kind of like the Marcus Garvey movement. If you couldn't physically get on that ship, you clothe yourself in Africanness. And so these principles come with that kind of clothing. If we practice it, we need to be responsible to practice and ask these questions. Franz Fanon in The Wretched of the Earth came out about 1961 with some details on that.
Can I jump in here for a minute?
Come on.
Okay, I wanted to say that there are several people that are understanding that we cannot live in this very twisted, hostile environment. And so people are quietly getting their own land, growing their own food, starting small schools and whatnot, and we're just not blasting it out.
Which
right.
I think is this Sister Ifayini?
Yes.
Okay. Yes.
Or Sister Boniswa. Most people know me as Sister Boniswa, but either way is fine. But yeah, many people are doing it quietly because we know, if we look at our history, we know that we built so much in America. So many towns, everywhere we lived, we built something. Even if it was a candy store, we made sure we were able to feed our children and take care of the community. And everything we do and we did has been torn down. So now people are doing it quietly, which makes a lot of sense. And very critical, because spirituality is very critical, but we also have to be able to to defend what we built.
Right.
We've never been able to do that adequately, right, brother? So there are people who are, you know, making sure they arm themselves and do what needs to be done, because there is an enemy out there.
Right.
And we see that in what happened to Wesley Snipes. He built a whole defense nation out there, and they got him on tax evasion because they couldn't get him on anything else. But he was teaching defense, self-defense, and how to grow your own food and all that stuff. Quietly.
Well, Snipes did that?
Wesley Snipes, some years
ago.
But after he got out of jail, I don't think he did much of anything.
See, that's the thing. They will punish us. You know, they'll call us all kinds of names. We're lazy and we're violent and robbers and whatnot. And as soon as we do something for ourselves, they switch up and say, oh, we got to go ahead and take them out and destroy them.
Uh-huh. You know that.
Yeah.
So that's why we got to shore up spiritually. Go ahead, Erdowa.
No, I was just saying that's that mammalian brain.
Uh-huh.
You know, they're for their own kind, but not for others. And it's the whole.
Yeah, I went to an interesting workshop where there were anthropologists speaking to the reptile, the brain. Hello?
No, that's all right. You're getting it.
Go ahead, Erdowa.
No, I was just saying that's that mammalian brain.
Uh-huh.
You know.
Yeah.
I thought you, okay. Who?
Someone is,
okay, just who's speaking on, right now?
Someone came online. Area code 414-587.
Oh, okay.
Yes. This is, I'm really enjoying the conversation. And I'm hearing how justice and self-determination is being activated or enacted by individuals. But I do have a question as a people, what is it that we need to do to acquire the protection and or justice that we need as a group,
Erdowa, you want to address that?
Let me, before she does that, Brother Horace, it sounds like you're driving, and we're picking up your sound. If you could kind of roll your window.
Okay.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay, yes, I just wanted to make a comment on the warriors. Yes, we need warriors, but they need to be peaceful warriors. Our power depends on having access to our power within. And if we're trying to be powerful with the resources that we have against the quote-unquote mighty U.S. of A, we have to find the power that we have available to us, and that's within. We have to internalize and believe that we can change events in the world through our own spiritual power. But, you know, protection comes from living the laws. You can't be a violator yourself and then expect to be protected. So we have to live the laws of Ma'at. We have to work together. We have to define ourselves, name ourselves, and speak for ourselves. Being self-determining is very important. That's the way to survival for our people. But we have to do it from internal to external. It's the way the Creator created the world, and we have to create ours following that same sequence.
So, Erdogan, are you saying that, am I hearing you correctly, are you saying that the conditions that we see out here are direct results from us ignoring the internal development?
I'm not in a position to say that it's a direct result. We can all see that they've happened, that they occur concurrently.
Okay.
Whether one is the cause of the other, I'm not, that's beyond my pay level to say. But
okay.
That's the one thing that we have not fully explored. It's the one resource that we have not fully cultivated and used on behalf of our people. And it's the one thing that we have that our oppressors don't have. So we don't want to keep doing the same things the same way and expect different results. We have to get back to the order of things, and that is start from within. Build up, live in harmony with those laws that govern the universe, and then build, put those bricks in place, with the mortar being that spiritual culture.
All right, thank you. Listeners, we really appreciate you, so give us some more wisdom from you. 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. Want to hear from you.
While we're waiting for callers, you have somebody?
Yeah, this is Sister Bonita again. I'll ask a question. Hello?
Yes. Okay, we're listening.
So as the Queen Mother talks about peaceful, staying in a peaceful position and going within and building ourselves spiritually, I know that to be a truth. However, there, in the motherland, there were many tribes that were living spiritual, you know, according to spiritual laws. As a matter of fact, it looks like, and some historically were living it to their detriment, because when they were dealing with the invaders and they were fighting, and they won. The invaders backed off, and then the invaders came back. The Caucasian invaders came back, you know, again, because they don't ever stop. And the Africans said, "Well, we can't fight them because we already won, and our laws say we have to, you know, not continue this." And then the invader just was successful in just destroying a lot of places where they did have peaceful reactions and worked according to their laws. So how would that be different in our case?
You make me, Sister Anifa, you make me think of Bookman in Haiti when they were fighting. And what makes me think of that is when he came and taught Toussaint and his group, look, there's some powerful spiritual stuff. with the backing of our ancestors, let's go to it. Mm-hmm. And so they did the spiritual and the physical warfare,
mm-hmm.
and just whoop these people's behind. And like you say, they keep coming back, don't they?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So how do we get rid of these animals?
And
these predators, how do we get rid of two-legged predators?
We got our work cut out. The anthropologist said that they are called, they are descendants of, what do they call them?
Neanderthals?
Neanderthals, yeah. So, you know, there is a difference. And so how do we get rid of the predatory Neanderthal? That's what you're asking.
Mm-hmm.
We don't get rid of them. We have to control them. And being a peaceful warrior doesn't mean that you don't do what's necessary to defend yourself.
Oh, okay.
But it means that you don't dissipate your power.
Mm.
You know, we have to consolidate our power.
Mm.
So then
can you elaborate on that?
Okay.
We have another caller.
Yep, that's what I was going to ask.
Go right ahead. I'm sorry, you have another caller when you get you.
What's the question? What was the last question?
Could you elaborate on dissipating?
Elaborate on consolidating the power.
Yes, that's doing the spiritual work, living by spiritual laws, the consequences that you mentioned in various African societies is not a reason to adopt the methods of the invaders. You know, our way is our way. The invader's way is not our way. And so we don't have the facility to use their way anyhow. So the way of our ancestors is our way. And if there were consequences to that, we can't change the law, and we can't stop applying the law and living by the law. It's a hard pill to swallow, but we have to live by the law.
Phoenix, Arizona, 602.
Dr. Rogers, good evening, and good evening to your guests.
Good evening.
Yes, brother. Good evening. You know, I think we have to reach back a little bit in history and pick up the baton that was dropped by Mr. Garvey left off. You know, we didn't finish what Mr. Garvey started. You see, we have to go back and pick up that baton and finish the race. You see what I'm saying? Because until Africa is united, until we have a big black army, navy, air force, and the marines to respond to these people, they're not going to stop because they are megalomaniacs, kleptomaniacs, some pathological liars. They can't help themselves. And you have to adapt some of his principles to deal with him. You see, the Chinese, he don't mess with the Chinese, because the Chinese say, look, if you get too close to me, I got something for you. That's the only way you go, these people respond. They don't understand anything else. That's the environment they lived in Europe. It's a violent environment. And that's in their psyche. You know, they're not going to change. But, you know, the advantage we have today is that they are only one-ninth of the world's population. So in order for them to rule, they have to recruit from the same group of people they are oppressing. Mm-hmm. See, they're a minority mm-hmm. on the planet, but they have accomplices in our from our own group that's helping mm-hmm. them to rule. Yeah. So we have to clean house first. We have to mm-hmm. clean our house first, and mm-hmm. then we can begin to deal with them. They don't understand anything else. I'm telling you, they don't understand peace. Yeah, war, like, you know, what Dr. Amos Wilson said, they are genetically disposed to violence. You see, that's their nature. How are you going to deal with it? How are you going to deal with a megalomaniac, a kleptomaniac, a homicidal person, a pathological liar, all wrapped up in one? How are you going to deal with somebody like that?
Now, what did you say your name is, brother?
Brother Marcos, like Marcos Garvey.
Brother Marcos. He did say he would return on the wind, didn't he?
That's it. It's Garvey is in our death. We ain't got no choice. We don't have no choice right now. So that's all I got to say. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Brother Marcos.
Thank you so much. I'm so glad you called in. Folks, we're going to have to kind of wind it down because I think we got like 5 minutes left. And do we have any more calls? Maybe we take one more call?
All of the mics are open if they want to make a comment. I didn't know nobody knew, but everybody's mic is open.
Okay. So, once again, we all need to ask ourselves this question. Who am I? Am I really who I am? And am I all I ought to be? And that has everything to do with being responsible. Sometimes we talk a great game, and we know a lot of facts about history, and we can name a lot of people in our heritage, but we're not willing to walk the talk. We're not willing to do the inside work.
Mm-hmm.
It's exterior. Let's do this for the kids. Let's do this for who? Let's do this for them. And we're not simultaneously looking to say, okay, look, what do I need to clean up in here? What do I need to assess that I can do more of or less of? And so we got to do this, y'all. Are we building that mortar, that spiritual development got to go between those bricks of principles and laws? Who am I? Do I live my heritage? Am I really who I am? Am I being authentic? And am I doing all that I can do? And nobody else can answer that question for anyone, those questions for anyone. It's self-examination, spending some time, as Queen Mother has said, going inside. So, Queen Mother, can you just wrap up some things that you want to leave us with?
Well, we said Kuji Chagali is define ourselves, name ourselves. Naming ourselves can be a first step towards changing the mental food that we consume.
Okay.
If we're wearing names of the people who are bent on destroying us, that's a compliment to them. That's emboldening them. So we need to be wearing our own names. Names are energy, and energy vibrates and affects ourselves and helps us to become what we are called. So we got to look at our names. Mm-hmm. Then we have to look and speak for ourselves. We have to look at what language we speak. You didn't choose to speak English. Why is English the only language we can speak? And why do our people refuse to speak our African languages? If you say something in the Kemetic language or even Swahili, they'll refuse to respond, you know? So we've got to look at that. We got to look at all these things that we didn't choose to accept and agree to, but we do agree to. We've been duped. And so we have to work on our mental food as well as our physical food, both at the same time.
Queen Mother, thank you so very much for your wisdom and your wonderful energy. And thank the audience for joining us tonight. And I'm fired up from the call-ins because I could feel you guys' energy. And so keep that up and let's continue to use that that mortar of spiritual development as we build these bricks and rebuild our community. Want to thank the Sankofa Council for its support in the program, and we look forward to bringing more programs in the future. Remember, again, to look out for the change in the one for next week from 3 to 5 so we can accommodate our brother, our sister from the motherland who wants to come in and talk to us about profiting from our community together, Ujamaa. The Nguzo Saba is not just Kwanzaa, it's 365 days of us living the truth of who we are. So we'll see.